You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the station, the university, or the UC Board of Regents. I'm Tina Spindler, and welcome to In the Garden with the University of California Master Gardeners. I'm here with my fellow Master Gardener, Katrina Kirkaby. Hey, Katrina.
Good morning, Tina.
Can you believe that summer is almost over? We're in September. How did that happen?
I have no idea, but it sure flew by fast.
It did. Well, I hope everyone had a great summer and got to go on lots of fun trips. We suggested everybody kind of take it easy in August in the garden, so hope after that month of rest you're ready to get busy again, because September can be a pretty busy month.
It can be. A wonderful month, but a busy month.
It is, and it heralds the change of the seasons. In Southern California, of course, September, it can often be one of our hottest months, but the good news is that even though it can be quite warm, the days are shorter.
Days are shorter.
So you get less hours of the heat. So.
And you'll start noticing your plants are starting to fade out, and times are they know the sun.
Yes. And
the seasons.
And if you're like my garden, they probably faded in August. So I'm ready in September to start making some changes. And so that's what we're going to talk about today.
Okay, let's go. Where would you like to start?
Well, let's start in the veggie garden because, you know, I'm all about food, right? So
food and flowers.
Yeah, I love the flowers in the garden, but gotta have good stuff to eat before you're ready to go out there and garden, period, right?
I don't know about you, but my vegetable garden is kind of fading.
Mine is too. It was fading in August. I started ripping out some tomato plants in August. Have a couple that are still, you know, hanging on. Look terrible, but they still have a few tomatoes on, so I won't pull them until I've harvested every last tomato. How about you? Did you get good tomatoes this year?
We got fair tomatoes. We were gone a little bit too much.
Yeah.
So, you know, house sitters and other people watering, but it was okay. We got some tomatoes.
Yeah. If you took our advice in July and planted a second crop of tomatoes, they're probably doing great right about now. And if you didn't, you can try planting some tomatoes now, particularly if you go for some of the ones that say that they fruit and flower in cooler weather. Those, they're often called winter tomatoes. They have mixed performance for me. So, but it is something, if you love your tomatoes and you want to try planting a couple of those in September while the soil is warm, and I would get them, you know, in even a gallon or at least a 4-inch pot if
yes,
you can
at
find
least,
them.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what you also have to be aware of? Your garden and my garden is a little bit different with sun. You have wonderful sun this time of year, but by this time of year, the sun has moved enough and I have big trees that shade it. So I don't have very good luck at all trying to do a second planting. So be mindful if you're thinking about doing that. Tina's got great sun this time of year. Mine has just gone behind some trees. I'm on the north side of a hill, and I don't have very good luck.
Good point. Veggies, as we've mentioned before, need at least 6 hours of full sun a day. So if you are located in a spot where, as Katrina says, the sun's going to be lower in the sky now. It's not going to be straight up like it was in July. And if that causes shadowing of your garden and you're not getting 6 hours of sun, then you're going to be hard-pressed to grow most vegetables. Maybe lettuce. You can get some lettuce going, but the sun-loving vegetables, definitely not. So in September, what I pretty much do is I leave the sunny things that are still producing. So if you still have squash, my peppers actually seem to do the best kind of in September. I think because they just like the hot weather, they just thrive through August and September. So I leave the peppers. But as I said, you know, I've pulled out the tomatoes, my cucumbers, you know, they got, some sort of fungal, powdery mildew, you know, whatever. So the cucumbers are done. Sometimes the zucchini is done this time of year because it gets powdery mildew also. So just pull out what isn't producing anymore. And
make room,
because you can start planting from seed directly in the ground this month for your lettuces, your peas, arugula, all of those green, cool season veggies that we're going to start switching to. But just be aware, if you are going to do that, do it at a time when you're going to be home. Because, as Katrina said, when you have, you know, helpers taking care of your garden and they aren't actually living there, you know, they may not notice how desperate your garden is for water.
Or they could be living there and they're just not gardeners.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Oh, well, we'll wait a few more days.
Yeah.
And water.
And particularly if you are going to start from seed, you have to water every day. Mm-hmm. And sometimes twice a day if we're having particularly hot weather or the Santa Ana winds. So in October, you for sure want to start your cool season veggie garden. And you can do it in September if you have the time to be, you know, diligent about your watering.
And you also have to be more aware, too, if you live closer to the coast or farther inland. For me, planting in September in the vegetable garden sometimes can be very precarious because we could get really hot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those little seeds could dry out fast. And even the plants, if you don't buy them from seeds, they could dry out fast. And then we get hit with the Santa Anas. So depending on where you are, it's kind of hit and miss. You have better luck. You're closer to the coast. I'm in the foothills, and I get more heat, and the Santa Ana winds just come right through the garden.
Yes, absolutely. So I think the bottom line for September is one of cleaning out and getting ready for planting, and then, you know, judge based on your location, the weather forecast, whether you're going to be home or not, whether you want to just maybe get your soil ready.
Yeah,
and then,
I find getting,
and then plant later.
You know, what we do is we tend to get soil ready. It's just a lot of cleanup, you know, and it's a whole project for us just to clean up our beds. But it's so nice when it's all clean, when you want to go plant, when you're ready to plant.
Oh,
September,
so
October,
nice. Yeah.
When you get so excited about planting your vegetables and you don't have to deal with cleaning up, because, you know, we all know that's not usually our most fun part.
Right.
Is cleaning up, but it's so nice to go plant when you have it. It's all prepared.
Exactly. And let's talk about preparation for a minute, because in California we basically only have two seasons, the warm season and the cool season. When those seasons switch, that's when we want to refresh our soil. And so when you are cleaning out your beds, your next step is going to be to dig down about, you know, 8 to 12 inches, depending on what you're going to be planting and the type of soil you have. More heavy clay-like soil needs a little bit more tilling because it's compact and doesn't allow as much air in for your roots. So dig down, you know, 8 to 10, 12 inches. And after you've turned the soil, I like to spread a good 3 to 4 inches of new compost or soil amendment. Has lots of names. We've mentioned them in the past. Often at the nurseries, when you see it in the bags, it's called garden soil. It's really not soil. It's really compost, which is decomposed organic matter like grass clippings and leaves and you know, small branches, that sort of thing. But you want to add that organic matter into your soil every time you replant. And so for us, that's going to be in the fall and then again in the spring before we plant our summer crops. So turn your soil, add that 3 or 4 inches of soil amendment on top, then take a cultivator, which is one of those tools that has the little tines, look like bent fingers, metal.
Kind of claws.
Like claws, yeah. And you just want to chop that soil amendment in with your native soil. Get it mixed really nice and fine.
And you could use a hoe, too.
You can use a hoe, too.
Whatever works for you.
six packs in, or if you're going to plant seeds, then rake the soil up a little bit to loosen it and plant your seeds.
You know, it's so much nicer doing it that way. You know, I've tried to beat before, you know, you kind of cheat and say, well, it's all the whole bed isn't quite ready, I'm just going to do this. But if you clean it up and start with a fresh plate, you know, it is really nice to be able, and then when you, as the time goes by, you get more excited about planting.
Yeah.
And you can just go plant, and you're not letting the plant sit there on the side until you decide to clean up, and your plants can sometimes die.
Oh, that's what I do constantly. I meant to plant a second crop of tomatoes in July. Never got them in the ground. They sat there until they died.
I'm so glad you're healing,
well,
Tina.
That's because I hadn't, you know, the space where I was going to put them wasn't prepared, and, you know, the time went by. So had I prepared the space first, I could have come home and dropped them right in the soil. So very good advice. So now let's just run through quickly what it is you're going to be planting in the fall, where you're going to switch, as we said, from the warm season veggies to the cool season, and those consist of, think leafy, so anything leafy, lettuce, spinach, arugula.
Kale.
Ooh, our favorite, kale. Anything leafy, and then the other thing is anything roots, so carrots, turnips, beets, radishes, anything roots. And then also peas. Peas love the cooler weather. And I like to plant them, and I think you do too, in succession, which means we'll plant, like I'll plant maybe a 5-foot row, and then 2 weeks later I'll plant another 5-foot row. And that's so I don't get all of the peas at once, because we can only eat so many.
You know, and we do that with broccoli and cauliflower too, because at one time I planted, I think, 12 broccoli or 12 cauliflower, something like, they all came ripe at the same time. And that's a lot to eat for, you know, my husband and I are home by ourselves now, and that's a lot for two people. But if I plant some now, and I plant some in 2 weeks, and then I plant 2 weeks again, you have something every week, unless you want to do a major crop and give it away.
Right.
But I tend to like the ones where I have succession, where I can eat through the season.
Absolutely. And then Katrina just mentioned the broccoli and cauliflower, and that's the last group that is great for the cool weather, which lasts basically, you know, until March. So from September, October until March, the cool crops, they're called, and that would be cabbages, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. Those are also good winter veggies.
You know, people underestimate winter crops. I love winter vegetables. And so many people think, oh, I could only plant in the summertime. Actually, besides tomatoes, I think my winter crops, I like them more.
I do too. I love that. And to talk about the peas, you know, there's not just shelling peas. There's the pea pods, the kind that, you know, you stir fry, are just probably my favorite green vegetable. I just love eating those. They're just so fresh. And if you have kids, they absolutely adore picking those right out in the garden and eating them as they're standing there, because they're crunchy and sweet, and it's a great...
It's amazing, and they see where it comes from. It's great to get them connected to the garden.
Yeah. And then the other thing I love, too, about the winter crops is the varieties. If you plant yourself, the varieties that you can grow. I love a lettuce garden. I like to plant it in, like, stripes. I like a dark purple and then a lime green and then maybe a red and then, you know, another type of green. And it looks so pretty. And then you put a little bit of kale in, which has more of a grayish tint. And so your vegetable bed, when it's full of greens like that, is actually, you know, super attractive.
It's beautiful.
And in pots, too. You think about it. You know, if you use the different colors in the pots, that it's just as pretty. And you can mix it with flowers. Mix it with some cool season flowers like pansies or calendula with lettuce. And then you have just this super attractive pot that you can put at your front door if that's where your son is. And yet then you can go out when you're ready to make dinner and pick off a nice colorful salad.
You know, Tina, you made a really good point. Not everybody has room for a vegetable garden. And especially winter vegetables, you could have pots, and they're beautiful. You know, like lettuce, you can just pick leaves at a time so the pot will stay beautiful, and you just keep harvesting off of that. And just because you don't have a big plot of land to be able to have a vegetable garden, you could do a lot in pots. Now, another thing I've done if you don't have a lot of room is I planted some of my vegetables with my flowers.
I love doing that. Yeah, it's so awesome.
It's just, people will look at it and go, it's fun to watch people look at it. I had one person one time call me outside and go, you have this big white plant. And I'm like, what? They go, it's outside, it's in your next to the roses. And I'm like, she goes, I've never seen anything like it. And I'm like, what do I have out there? Well, she would know what it was, but it was out of context. I had a huge cauliflower.
Oh, how funny.
With all the leaves, and she didn't realize it because it was with the blooming flowers that this cauliflower was there.
Right.
So if you don't have a per se vegetable garden, stick something in with your other plants.
Absolutely.
As long as it has some sun.
Absolutely. They need 6 hours of sun, so if you've got a place where
you have water.
And you have a place where you're growing flowers that get sun, your veggies would be happy there as well.
Yeah, stick some in there and see what happens. And it's kind of fun. And sometimes it's a lot closer to your front door.
It is. And I've seen one of my favorite gardens I ever saw is someone used a purple cabbage as an edging in front of their flower bed. And the purple, of course, I think they were growing some sort of white flower. You know, the contrast between the purple cabbage and this white flower was just stunning. And I think what folks don't realize, perhaps, especially for cabbages and lettuce, you know, we're used to buying a head of cabbage, a head of lettuce. But when you grow them, if you've never grown cabbage before, the cabbage plant grows a whole bunch of leaves. And then the leaves that are in the center are what form the head. But surrounding that head, there's just a whole bunch of leaves. So if you're growing purple cabbage, for instance, you're going to have this beautiful set of purple leaves with this eventually, you know, little purple head in the center of it. So if you think that, oh, I couldn't put a head of cabbage in my garden because that would look weird to just have this ball. They don't come as a ball. They come with a bunch of leaves, or they grow a bunch of leaves first, and then the ball, which is condensed leaves, forms in the middle.
You know, the same with the cauliflower, because it had this beautiful leaves coming out. Now, I tell you, my hardest part was, it looks so pretty, I didn't want to eat it. And my husband says, that's our dinner. And I'm like, but it's so pretty there. So, you know, you got to be a little tougher than I am. I'm just like, okay, well, I won't take all of them. Because it just looked nice there. What can I say? And it's unique, and it's conversations, because people sometimes can't figure out what you got there.
Yeah, it is. And especially, you know, imagine if you had planted the orange cauliflower, you know, or the purple cauliflower, because believe it or not, cauliflower comes in different colors. And so that's another reason to plant them yourself in your own garden, is it's fun to have that variety.
You made me think of something. Now's also a good time to think about it, because if you want to get some seed, you have so much more variety if you buy seeds than if you actually go in the store and already have them started. So right now, Tina's famous for going through seed catalogs.
Yeah, and if you are going to plant your winter veggies from seed, great idea. And so let's just talk about how to do that. If you're planting peas, carrots, any of the root vegetables, and any of the lettuces, you can sow those seeds directly in the ground, right where they're to grow. But if you're going to plant the cauliflower, the broccoli, those are better started in six packs and planted out when they're, you know, 3-4 inches tall. They're just a little harder to get to germinate if you plant them directly in the ground. You can give it a try, and if you're really good about keeping your seeds moist, you might have great luck with that. But I tend to have better luck personally if I plant those crops in the six packs and then plant them out when they're seedlings.
And remember, they're in six packs. You have to water them sometimes more than once a day, depending on the heat and where you have them.
Right.
You don't want those little guys being dry out.
Right. One of the best places to start seeds this time of year is on your patio, on a covered patio. In the wintertime, we always suggest that you start them indoors, but that's because they need warmth to germinate. But this time of year, of course, we have plenty of warmth, but you don't want to necessarily have them being baked on by the sun. So I like to start my seeds in August and September on the shaded patio where they get bright light. You know, it's brighter than if they were sitting in a window inside the house. And the temperatures are, you know, plenty warm enough, hopefully not too hot, for the seeds to germinate. So, yeah, if you have a spot on your patio, that's a great place to start. But you do have to, as Katrina said, you know, water them every day and maybe twice a day if we've got some windy weather.
Yeah. If they dry out, they're not going to germinate.
No, they're done. They're done. If they dry out one time, they're done. They have a little sixth sense somehow that tells them, oh, not enough water, we're not going to grow.
So if you're going away for the weekend or a week, or you really, and you have somebody watching your stuff, you really have to let them know, especially if they don't know about gardening.
Right.
Go, oh, it's dry, you know, I'll just water it in a few days, I'll make up for it and water it extra.
Yeah.
I've heard that before.
Doesn't work for seeds. The other thing you can do to keep the moisture in is there are seed starting kits, which come with a tray that the cell packs sit in, and then it has a little clear awning that goes over it, and that works to keep the moisture in, but it also traps heat, so you have to be careful, you know, if the weather's hot, about, you know, not getting those
cooking your
seeds, because also if it's too hot, they won't germinate either. So seeds can be, you know, a little tricky, but they're super fun, and you get so much variety if you start from seed.
And inexpensive too.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You know, if you want to do successive crops, you know, and you're doing it from seeds or whatever, those lettuces or why not, a packaged seed lasts forever.
Yeah. And if you're going to do lettuces, especially a favorite thing of mine is to do a lettuce bowl. And so you literally get, you know, either a bowl-shaped pot, but any shaped pot is fine. And you just sprinkle the seeds, you know, right on top. And you can sprinkle them fairly densely, because then what you do as they all grow is you start thinning and you use those baby plants as your gourmet baby lettuces. And so eventually in the pot, you're probably going to only leave, you know, 3, 4, 5 plants, depending on the size of your pot. But in the meantime, you've been harvesting all of those baby lettuces to make some really beautiful salads or garnishes.
It's yummy.
Yeah, super
impressive
yummy.
Too.
Yeah.
You know, for your loved ones or guests or whatever.
And again, you know, how fun would it be to have one pot that has a lime green variety of lettuce, another one that has, you know, a dark purple variety of lettuce or red or, you know, whatever favorite you are, and then you group them all together and you end up with this, you know, really colorful, attractive little display. That you can eat.
That you can eat, and it's easy to do.
Yeah. It's a fun thing to do with kids, too.
It's a great way to get kids involved.
Yeah.
It's fast results. It's kind of like planting carrots with kids.
Yes, and I love to plant carrots, but the trouble with carrots is they're a long time to maturity.
Yeah.
Like, gosh, 4 months before they're, you know, big enough to eat. And so the kids can get a little impatient. I actually, you know, because we volunteer at school gardens as master gardeners, I've had parents come back and say, I could not get my kid to eat lettuce until they started growing it here at the school garden, and now this kid eats salads like crazy. So if they grow it, they'll try it.
Oh, we've had kids. I had one father call me up and said, what's this? And I said, what are you talking about? And he says, my daughter talks about vegetables at your house. She doesn't eat vegetables. And I laugh, and I said, well, we put her to work in the garden, and she gets to harvest her own vegetables. And once she sees what it is, and it's hers, and she has ownership, and it's like you kind of draw them in. And, you know, and we love drawing kids in, and even with the fruit trees and picking fruit or, you know, pruning them. You know, you talk to the kids about it, and if they're old enough, they could, you know, wait a little bit down the line. But, you know, the lettuces are for the little ones. Or they're for all ages, actually. But it's great for the little ones because you have such immediate results.
Right, right. And you just put a little bowl of ranch dressing out. They'll eat anything if you let them dip it in ranch dressing.
I haven't tried that one yet. You can tell someone's a grandma.
Yeah.
Well, a new grandma.
A new grandma.
She doesn't eat lettuce yet, but that'll be my trick when she gets a little older.
Okay, well, I think, was there anything else you think we missed, Katrina, about the fall veggie garden, or are we pretty good?
I think we're pretty good.
Pretty good?
We want to talk about fertilizer at all?
Sure. Oh, you're right. I did forget when I was talking about preparing the soil. I forgot to say when you're using that cultivator to mix the compost in the soil, you also should have sprinkled an organic fertilizer on top of the soil as well, so that as you're mixing it in, that fertilizer gets mixed into the soil, because it's actually the only time that we can put the soil or the fertilizer where the roots are. You know, we can fertilize on top once the plants are growing, but it's the only time we can get it down where the roots are is when we're tilling the soil. So great time, and really important to add the fertilizer at the same time.
I think we've covered it.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, and check your watering system.
Yes.
You know, it's a good time to check and make sure everything's working. Even if you're not planting into October, it's one of those things you can get done in September, and you don't have to think about it in October, because you want to spend time planting in October.
Yes.
Or September.
Exactly.
But make sure your water system is working correctly and you don't have any leaks, or you know, something's not working, you're not getting any water or too much water. So that's a good, just in general, thing to do periodically anyways.
Right, right. So, yeah, I think that should do it for veggies.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's move on to the rest of the garden, because we have to do the same thing in the rest of the garden, and that is transition from warm season plants to cool season plants. And this is also going to be our opportunity to plant bulbs, which if you listen to our show regularly, you know that I am a nut about planting bulbs in the fall so that you have these amazing flowers in the winter and spring.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Exciting. So we need to clean out our beds.
We need to
clean out our pots.
You know, if you mostly grow flowers in pots, and you know, probably they're starting to look a little... But the cool thing about pots is you leave the ones that look good and you just clean out the ones that look bad. But in your garden, if you have flower beds, you want to, you know, start pulling out the stuff that's bit the dust or is just looking really scraggly. Prepare your soil exact same way you did for your vegetable garden. And then you can also grow some flowers from seed. And some of the ones that are my favorites for the cool weather are calendula. I like the compact varieties of calendula better, because calendula can tend to get a little leggy. And so I think the ones that grow, you know, often I like tall flowers because I like to cut them. But calendula doesn't usually grow straight and tall. It grows kind of sprawly, and it doesn't look very tidy. So in calendula, I do like the more compact varieties. Then snapdragons. I love snapdragons.
You get the tall snapdragons.
I get the tall snapdragons, and I actually grow some of them from seed because it's hard to find the tall snapdragons. The other thing that's hard with snapdragons is they are often sold in mixed six packs with mixed colors, and I don't like that.
Personal choice.
I personally like to have swaths of color. I like to plan my color, you know, like I might want, you know, yellow snapdragons to go with my orange calendulas, you know, that sort of thing. So I grow them from seed because I can choose, you know, the color of the seed. And then sometimes I grow them from seed because I want a specific variety, like Rocket, which is a tall snapdragon.
That is spectacular.
Oh,
if you guys
gosh.
Haven't seen that, go Google it or something, because they're tall and they're beautiful and they make such a statement in the garden. You know, I was so used to the smaller ones, and I'm like, but once you see the tall ones, you won't go back.
You won't. And we'll give you more tips in just a second. But first, we need to let you know that you are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to KUCI.org. So yes, tall snapdragons are awesome. Sometimes the nurseries will carry Rocket. And
they're hard to find.
They're hard to find, though. And you can also ask if it's a nursery that has, you know, a help desk, you know, Rogers, Armstrong's, Green Thumb are some of our local ones that will have, you know, a person that you can go to. You can actually ask them, you know, do you know if you are going to be getting Rocket snapdragons in? And often they'll take your name and get back to you, you know, when come in. I've had that happen, which is awesome. Now, sometimes, you know, they only get them in the 4-inch, you know, and so then you're paying $4 for one plant.
Or if you buy a
six-pack, you know.
Or if you buy seeds.
Or if you buy seeds, of course, you can get dozens of plants for $4.
You can fill up your yard.
But snapdragon seeds are really tiny, just to give you a heads up. And they're one of the seeds that needs light to germinate. Who knew? Some seeds don't want to be buried under the soil. They like to lay more on the surface of the soil. And snapdragon seeds are one of those. So just as a heads up. But boy, so fun when you get them to germinate.
Oh, and you see them in the yard. You're just like, wow, what is that? Yeah. Why did you feed that plant?
Yeah.
You know, most people haven't seen the tall ones.
Well, it is funny you say that because people do ask me because I grow a lot of tall stuff. Like the Nicotiana, the flowering tobacco, and they'll say, I've seen flowering tobacco before, but never that big. What do you feed it? And I have to confess, it's not what I'm feeding it. It's the variety. You have to just look for tall varieties of things, like the snapdragons.
And you know, the snapdragons are so nice, the tall ones, because then you plant in front of them. They're not like in competition with anything else. They add to the palette, and it draws your eyes across what's in front of it all the way back. So you actually see more in your garden.
You do, and that's one of the, you know, I'm not a designer, right? I'm an accountant by, you know, training. But there are little things that you can just learn about designing a garden. And one of those is, as you said, to have layers and different heights so that your eye gets drawn across the garden and actually ends up being more entertained by those different.
You know, it's so much nicer seeing that. I've planted before plants that get hidden by other plants in front of them. So you almost have to stand on top to see them. And it's nice to be able to see, like the snapdragons, see them from the distance and let your eye, they see the first plant and the second plant and they see the snapdragons. And it's just, it's very calming and beautiful and it just adds to your garden. There's
it really
does. It's not a competition.
Does.
It's a synergistic effect.
And it's a philosophy we've said before, most often with regard to planting pots with flowers. And that is thriller, filler, spiller. And in a pot, that means your thriller is something that usually is tall or brightly colored or has a really interesting form. And your spiller is something that comes over the edge of your pot and drapes down a little bit. And then the filler is the mid-height plants, you know, that are lower than the thriller but taller than the spiller. Well, you can actually use that same philosophy when you're thinking about your garden in beds, I mean in ground garden. The thriller is the tall stuff that you plant towards the back of your bed. The filler is the shorter stuff that goes in front of that. And then the spiller would be the short things that you just edge your garden bed with. So I always try to keep that in mind. And it's the other reason that I plant in swaths of color, because I think that, you know, if you have not six colors all in a small space, but, you know, one color that travels for a while before you switch to another color, or another color is behind it, you know, as an accent or in front of it. It just makes your garden a lot more pleasing to the eye.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
It is just it's a beautiful thing to see. And also, I have a, when you come into my property, you see the plants from a distance. And when you have too many colors together, they all kind of run together. It doesn't make a statement at all. It kind of gets blurry. Where even though I was going for a long time, just big flowers,
yeah.
But I can get the same effect by planting a lot of smaller ones of the same color, and it just makes it more dense, and so it's more noticeable.
Exactly. It takes practice, you know, because most of us who love to garden are flower hogs, you know, and we want one of each, right? Because each one is so cool.
Well, you have one of each, except you separate them.
Yeah, I'm lucky in that I have a big yard.
She has a big yard, but she's like, I like this color, and I like that color, and I like that color.
But Tina, she just separates them, so they all make their individual own statements, but she could have many different colors.
Right, and also it's a good idea to repeat things. So for instance, if I were to grow white snapdragons, you know, white is a very unifying color, and so I can mix the white with some yellow pansies, or I can mix the white with blue delphiniums, you know, so you can choose a plant that you can repeat throughout your garden, but mix it with different colors so that it doesn't look like there's, you know, this borderline where, okay, the reds are here and the yellows are here. You can try
it. It flows.
It flows, yeah.
It flows. Your eye carries through the yard.
Yeah. But let's finish up this talk about the cool season flowers by mentioning a few others. We talked about calendula and the snapdragons. Another favorite that I love is foxglove, because they get super tall. A great one to put in the back. They are actually what's called a biennial, and if you plant them for a while, they just show green. Biennial means they grow foliage first and then grow their flower stalk, and then they're done. So with the foxgloves, if you plant them in the spring, you may not get the best flowering, but if you plant them in the fall and let the green leafy part grow all through the winter, then in late winter, early spring, they'll send up these stunning spikes. I mean, some varieties are like 6 feet tall. They're just spectacular.
Wow! Wow!
But do know that foxglove is a poisonous plant, so if you have small children, you may want to avoid that in your garden.
Or pets,
yeah. Although, you know, I've grown it with my dogs in the past, and they never bothered it. But to be totally safe, you would want to.
You need to know your dog.
You need to know your dog. Also, other ones, there's so many. I mean, people, I think that, oh, it's going to be winter. No, you know, no color, no flowers. Oh, no. The list goes on and on. So here's a few more. Nemesia, pansies. If you live where I do in open space, though, be aware the bunnies will eat your pansies to death. They love pansies.
I've had that happen.
So I personally only plant pansies in pots where I can keep them away from the bunnies. The English primroses are great for cool weather. Stock, if you've never planted stock. Plant stock. There's a lot of short varieties that are great for pots, but if you can find the stock imperial, which is a tall one, it's spectacular. And all stock is scented, so plant it under a window where you can, like I always plant it under our bedroom window in the flower bed there, because I love leaving that open and smelling.
Isn't that wonderful? Being in the house and smelling the plant.
It's so nice. And then, of course, sweet alyssum, we all plant that. Dianthus is one of my favorites to plant the last few years. I planted some dianthus last fall, and it survived through the summer. I mean, it
really
looked a little scraggly, but, yeah, dianthus is, like, so long-lived. The, you know, the short ones that you use for edging, the white ones in particular. The pink ones and purpley pink ones are lovely, but they don't seem to last as long as the white ones for me. But anyway, with all those choices, you'll have amazingly beautiful pots and amazingly beautiful
beds. Beds.
Especially if you add the next thing we're going to talk about.
Oh, Tina is smiling. Oh, we're right up her alley right now. Guess what we're going to talk about?
And that is bulbs. So you plant what bloom in winter and spring in California, but you plant them in the fall, and they start appearing in the nurseries in September. And the bulbs I'm talking about are daffodils and narcissus, which are all part of the same family, ranunculus, Dutch iris, anemone, and then there's many others, but those are my particular freesias. Those are my particular favorites. And you can purchase them in September when the stock is, you know, really good, or you can wait until October. I typically don't plant them because I pretty much change the beds in October for me, late September, October. And when you're going to be changing out your flower beds and planting the new flowers that we were talking about, stick some bulbs in between the flowers, and then you'll have daffodils or iris or ranunculus popping up in between your snapdragons or stock.
And it's such a wonderful surprise because you almost forget about them, unless you're like, grow, baby, grow. But you forget about
you
them,
do.
And all of a sudden, and you're busy later, and all of a sudden, you're not gardening, and these things come up.
Oh, they're so amazing. And people will think that you are just an expert gardener because we get Dutch iris from the florist, right? We get daffodils from the florist in bouquets because they're just such perfect flowers. So to have those growing in your garden is pretty special. Very, very fun.
It's beautiful, and it's unique, too.
It is.
You know, if
you
like something a little different, you know, so many gardens are just kind of stock. No, I didn't mean stock as in plant, but stock is...
In looks.
It's all the same things you get from the nurseries. And to have something a little different, people stop and look.
Yeah. And you'll notice...
And they think you're a good gardener.
Oh. When I first started planting bulbs, when I was in my late 20s, the neighbors were like, oh my gosh, where did you learn to be such a great gardener? And it's like, well, newsflash, bulbs come with their own supply of food in that big old fat structure of the bulb. And so they pretty much grow themselves.
You stick them in the ground and they will bloom.
Yeah. Yeah.
But tell us about planting bulbs.
Sure. So the bulbs, as I said, you plant them at the same time if you're going to be changing out your flower bed. You want to prepare the soil just like we talked about for planting a veggie garden. And then with the bulbs, depending on the type of bulb, you plant them at different depths. So probably the biggest bulb that you'll plant will be a daffodil. Those are, pretty big bulbs. Mm-hmm. They're like 2.5-3 inches in diameter and tall. And you generally want to plant the bulbs twice as deep as they are tall. On the other hand, if you have freesia bulbs, they're little. They're only 1.5 inches big and maybe 0.5 inches in diameter. So those you would only plant, maybe 2 inches deep. 2 to 3 inches deep. But usually when you buy either a package of bulbs or if you buy them out of the bins, because some of the nurseries have them loose in bins, they will have a sheet that tells you what depth to plant that bulb.
Take that sheet home with you.
Yes.
Or take a picture of that sheet because it's important to follow the directions.
Right.
One bulb, you don't treat like another bulb.
And some of them that we call bulbs aren't actually bulbs. Technically, they're called corms, like the ranunculus and the anemones. And you do have to look at the picture or the instructions because it might be a little less obvious which direction to plant them, up versus down. And so if you have that little instruction sheet, it will show you, like for the ranunculus, you plant the... that they kind of look like fingers all crunched together, and you want to plant it where the fingers are pointing down.
It's really easy.
Yeah.
It sounds harder than what it is. It's really easy. Once you look at it, you go, oh, that's really simple. Why haven't I done that before?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just taking the time to do it.
And the cool thing about bulbs also, if you don't have a garden, they are amazing in pots. And you can plant them in pots and I like to do combos. So I might do a combo of yellow daffodils with a pink ranunculus. And then I will, while you're waiting for them to come up, because it'll be months. If you plant them in October, they're not going to bloom until the end of January or February. So when I do plant them in pots, I plant a little something over the top of them, usually some pansies or violas or alyssum or a combination, so that then at least you're looking at something that looks nice for a few months.
And then you remember to water them.
And then lo and behold, several months later, you end up with this spectacular display. Or the other thing I do is I put those pots in a less visible place. You know, those aren't the ones I put at the front door.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I move them to the front door when they're in full bloom. So pretty fun way to garden, especially if you don't have much space. They're just super fun. They also make amazing gifts.
That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah. So if you put a bunch together, you know, in October, and then you can give them as hostess gifts during the holidays, or, you know, gifts especially for the grandma who has everything. You know, she would love a pot of flowers, especially if you do a little note and tell her, you know, what's going to be happening in the future. Then it gives her something to look forward to.
And then you could also go out and get interesting pots or containers for them.
Absolutely.
You know, you can make it a theme thing.
Sure. Yeah. Or if you know what they're... You know, if their house has a, you know, say a blue door, maybe you get a blue pot, you know, that matches the blue door or something. Or if it's, you know, a Tuscan style, you can get a Tuscan style pot, you know. So, yeah, so they're fun to do either in the ground or in a pot. And if you do them in a pot, fun to give as gifts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wonderful ideas.
So then we still have one more thing to talk about in terms of planting in the flower garden.
What are we going to plant now?
Perennials.
Perennials. How can we forget perennials?
Yeah.
Great time to plant perennials.
This
is the time of year.
It is. And it's
September, October.
Yeah, yeah. October especially. But September...
You can start thinking about it and looking at what you want.
Right. You want to start...
Homework time.
Cleaning out when you can, and then start hitting the nurseries, you know, seeing what's coming in, and then you'll have a place to plant it. And so let's talk about, you can plant almost any perennial that you can find in the nursery. Fall is a better time to plant. And when we say a perennial, we just mean a plant that lasts more than 1 year. So there's, you know, trees are perennials, right? But in this case, I'm talking about flowering perennials.
Annuals, which makes it easy. We're thinking annual, once a year kind of thing. And perennials, plants that live for multiple years.
Exactly.
I've gotten more into perennials over the years, too, because they're steadfast.
I have,
too. Less work.
Because, you know, as you get older, you want to do less digging, right? And if you plant a perennial, you don't have to replant twice a year.
And you know what's there.
Yeah, exactly. The reality is that you see a lot of the perennials in the nurseries in the spring because that's when they're blooming. So hopefully the nurseries that you have available to you will also carry some perennial plants in the fall, because that's actually the better time to plant them. Because,
and
Katrina?
Because they get the time for their little roots to go into the ground and make themselves at home and grow. And the ground's warm and it's friendly. And it's a really nice place, time to take root. Where if you plant it in the spring, the ground's cold and it hasn't had all those months to get the roots going. And once you have a great root structure, it makes a healthier plant, and you'll have bigger plants and bigger blooms, and the whole thing just works out better.
It does. So it's a great time to plant perennial salvias, and those actually will be in bloom. But note that there are annual salvias that you would not want to be planting this time of year because they like hotter weather. But if you find a perennial salvias, and the Mexican sage is one in particular that you'll probably see a lot of in the nurseries this time of year, because it blooms. It gets those beautiful lavender blooms.
All winter long.
And so it's one of the rare plants that is just looking gorgeous in September and October.
You have to be prepared. If you're going to do one of those, you have to have room. They're not little petite plants.
Although there are, you may not have seen them, but there are smaller varieties out now.
Really?
So just be sure when you're purchasing, you know, which one that you're getting. But if you have the room, the big ones are just stunning. I have them, and they are behind my iceberg roses. So when the iceberg roses are going off and the Mexican sage is going off, that lavender-white combination is just stunning.
And they're easy to take care of.
Oh, super easy to take care of.
So when
they bloom, those stalks, when the flower is dead and gone, you'll just cut that stalk all the way down to the very base of the plant, and the plant will send up new growth. So they're a great addition to a garden for
they're
fall color.
For me, they're really hardy.
Yeah.
I think everybody, they're pretty hardy. They're easy to grow. And I like that.
I
and
do
they
too.
Bloom in
yeah.
the wintertime.
Yeah.
Like when you need some color.
Yeah, they're a great fall bloomer. When most of the garden is looking burned up after August, they start blooming in September and are in full bloom September, October, November. They're just really, really pretty.
And they'll
repeat bloom, you know, depending on where you live and what the exposure is and so on.
Mine are just like wild.
They just keep going.
They just keep going. It's like, wow, I eventually have to cut them back at some point.
Yeah. So there are probably too many, you know, perennials to list, but, you know, azaleas, they won't be in bloom, but they would love being planted now. Camellias, they won't be in bloom. Well, actually, the camellias that will be in bloom this year are the, not the japonicas, but I'm having a brain freeze.
Me too.
The non-japonica ones, it'll come to me in a minute, but the other type of camellia, that there is a camellia that blooms in the fall, and you'll actually see a lot of them in, I'm going to look it up right now, you'll actually see a lot of them in the nurseries because they will be blooming right now. Here we go.
Can you find that too? I can't believe both are doing
it. I know. I'm going to try to keep... Oh, Sasanqua. There we go. Sasanqua. So there are two basic types of camellias. The japonicas, which get the really giant waxy looking flowers, quite spectacular. And those are winter bloomers. So great time to plant them right now in the fall. And then in January, you'll get these amazing flowers that, you know, what else are you getting in January?
Oh, and I love it. And then you can cut them off and put them in bowls of water. You get so many in one in a bowl of water, like a glass bowl of water. My house is filled with them.
I love them.
And you don't even have to do a bouquet. If you don't have any artistic creativity whatsoever, you snip one of those things off, stick it in a bowl of water. It looks impressive.
It's all you need. And I have one bowl that is like a long bowl, and I love to put three, you know, flowers in that bowl, and it makes a centerpiece, and it takes all of, you know, 60 seconds to create it.
Now, one thing to do is look them up and see what they look like beforehand, because if you go and buy them, they're green.
Right.
You don't know if you're getting what color you're getting, what it looks like. You don't really know.
Most of the nurseries, though, will have a tag on it, and the tag is actually, it's kind of cute. It's in the shape of the flower, and it'll be the color of the flower. So that's one way for you to tell what it looks like. But the Sasanquas will actually be in bloom this time of year. Their flowers are not as big and showy as the japonicas, but they actually do way better in my garden because here's a little, you know, obscure piece of information. I live in Irvine where I have reclaimed water as irrigation water, and the japonica camellias don't like that reclaimed water. I don't know why, but they just struggle.
Maybe it's the salt in it.
Yeah, it's a higher salt content. So that probably is it. But I have camellias here that are 15 years old, and in my old garden, they would have been, you know, 12, 15 feet tall. Mine are still like 3-4 feet tall, and they look totally spindly. But the Sasanqua camellias that I have are going gangbusters. And even though their flowers aren't big, they have probably 2 or 3 times as many on the shrub. My favorite one that I have is called Apple Blossom.
Is that the one outside your front door?
It's the one outside the front door. Katrina can tell you, when that goes off, it's amazing.
Oh, my goodness. It stops you in your tracks.
Yeah.
If you like plants, flowers, it stops you in your tracks. When it's blooming, it's just like, wow, what a statement. And what else is nice about it, it makes a good foundation plant the rest of the year.
It does, because it's just pretty green.
It's a beautiful, beautiful green.
Yeah.
So it's a great foundation plant. You think, oh, well, most people have shrubs. Now you think, oh, well, that's a shrub. But wow, when it blooms, it's like added value.
Yeah. So if you don't have Sasanquas, consider them. They're pretty awesome. But as we said, we have, you know, plenty of perennials, and you can pretty much plant any of them this time of year. So are we running out of time?
Yeah, we just have a few minutes
My
left.
My goodness, this went by fast.
It did, didn't it?
Just a couple of other quick tips. If you have a lot of ornamental grasses or any ornamental grasses growing in your yard, and a lot of us have switched to those because they're beautiful and they're also more drought tolerant, a lot of them need to be trimmed in the fall. So September, October, think about giving them their annual haircut. Another thing to, as long as we're talking about grasses, but now we'll switch to lawn type grasses. Remember there are two basic types of lawns, cool season and warm season grass lawns. And if you had a warm season lawn, you would have been feeding it during the summer. And your cool season lawn, which an awful lot of us have, the fescue type lawns like Marathon, we don't feed those over the summer. But once the season changes, at the end of September, you can start feeding your cool season lawn again. And it will look beautiful. And be sure that you monitor the water, because as the days get shorter, even though it's hot, you may not need to water as much.
If I'm going to have a higher water bill, it'll be right now. It's because I forgot to turn my sprinklers back. And that's the, you know, it's like, I forget it's hot outside. And I'm like, oh, it's hot. But what I forget is that the days are shorter.
Exactly. So even it's hard, yeah.
And that's, it's usually September is my month of messing up on my water if I'm going to mess up.
Yeah.
Just have to be really mindful of that, because you just don't put two and two together. It's hot, so you need a lot of water.
Right, right.
Well, it's hot, you just don't need as much.
True, because it's not for as long of a period. And then the last thing I'll just mention is, which I meant to talk about when we were talking about planting perennials, this is also the time of year that you'll want to clean up your perennials. So if they have flowers that have died, you'll want to deadhead. You can often shape them a little bit and cut out any dead wood. Same goes for your roses. My roses generally look pretty awful by this time of year, so you want to be sure you deadhead them and rake up any disease or insect-infested leaves off of the ground. And as the weather cools, the roses usually perk up, and if you give them a little food this time of year, you could even have roses in December.
And I've seen that. Tina has roses all over the place in December. It's really hard for her because they bloom all the time. And when do you really hard cut them back?
In January.
In January.
Blooming or not. But, yeah, it is kind of cool where we live. If you feed your roses this time of year, you'll get a nice bloom flush probably for your guests at the holidays.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I think with that, Tina, we're just about done.
Cool.
It went really fast. We hope everybody enjoyed the show today. If you have any questions, you can always, I know a lot of people are driving, you can Google UC Master Gardeners, Orange County, California. We have a wonderful website. There's a hotline if you have any questions. There's a lot of information on there you can learn from. We refer you to different sites, and we have lots and lots of information. And we have a good group of people who like to answer the hotline, so don't be afraid to use that.
Send a picture with your email question, though, if you have a problem. They love to be able to see what you're talking about.
All righty. Until next month, we're Katrina and Tina in the garden. Have a fun in your garden. I know cleaning up is not necessarily your most fun thing to do, but clean it up and start looking at what you're going to plant in later September and October.